Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So perhaps the best part of Governor Cuomo's State of the State address yesterday was a part you couldn't appreciate very well if you were hearing it on the radio. In the style of a video game, the new governor made fun of the three-men-in-a-room approach to settling the state budget. The visual here, keep this in mind if you didn't actually see it, is three battleships projected on a screen.
Right now, the budget process is like ships passing in the night. Hold on a second. Bring those ships back. I think I recognized someone. Is that? Zoom in on that man on that battleship. Yes, it is. Senate Majority Leader Dean Skelos. And look. It's Commander Sheldon Silver. Oh, and there I am. And here are the special interest groups within...
All right. The special interest groups were, by the way, firing missiles at the governor's ship. So battleship commander Andrew Cuomo in his first State of the State address yesterday. But who might those special interests be firing those video game missiles at the governor's ship? He fired back at the special interests at least three times in the speech without saying who they are. So let's break down some of what he said and see how it might actually affect New Yorkers. We'll play some other excerpts from the speech as well, which apparently was largely ad-libbed. I believe he did not work from a teleprompter in either his inaugural address or the State of the State yesterday. So Andrew Cuomo, a master of his material, I think we have to give him that. WNYC political blogger Ozzie Pabra is here. So is Daily News Albany bureau chief Ken Lovett. Hi, Ken. Hi, Ozzie.
Good morning.
Hello.
Now, wasn't that video game battleship moment, well, was it, Ozzie, just for entertainment value, or was he actually setting up something to happen differently in state government?
Well, the entire speech was geared towards the public and putting public pressure on the legislative process that most people sort of ignore. So actually having a visual way to show that there are people who are attacking him and that there's these three components to making the budget. And it's sort of saying, look, I'm responsible for making the budget, but there's also two other people there also.
Different, Ken, from Eliot Spitzer, who I think came in saying, I'm going to put pressure. I, Eliot Spitzer, am going to put pressure on you bad legislators. Cuomo seems to be bringing the people into it.
I think Andrew Cuomo knows that the legislature, the only time they really do anything that they don't want to do is when there is an enormous amount of public pressure. They've managed to hold off a lot of governors, and I think that's what his whole plan of attack is here, which is to put enormous amounts of pressure on the lawmakers. I think the video you saw yesterday, that particular part was also meant for levity, obviously, because it was a very dire, dense speech, filled with a lot of grim messages and a lot of unpopular ideas that he's asking the lawmakers to undertake. So I think he also was trying to break it up a little bit with laughter.
And certainly the heart of the speech was dire and grim and could have been delivered by a Republican or a Tea Party activist, a litany of how New York state government is too big. But Cuomo framed it differently, and I want to talk about that. But first, here is some of that litany.
Upstate is truly an economic crisis. In real GDP from 2001 to 2006, upstate New York grew about 1.7% per year, while the average in the nation was 2.7%. The costs of pensions are exploding. $1.3 billion in 1998-1999, projected for 2013, $6.2 billion, a 476% increase, and it's only getting worse. The state of New York spends too much money. It is that blunt, and it is that simple.
So Yes, Ozzie Paper, government is too big, says Andrew Cuomo. Carl Palladino or Chris Christie could have given that part of the speech. But this is Andrew Cuomo, son of Mario Cuomo, and he's going somewhere else, isn't he?
Right. Someone I spoke to yesterday, Larry Levy of Hofstra University, said he was just amazed that the son of the guy who rebuffed Ronald Reagan's shining city on a hill speech in 1984 is the one who is delivering a speech talking about cutting services, quote unquote, right-sizing government, and reducing the cost of what it takes for the government to actually play a role in people's lives. And not once, Ken can correct me if I'm wrong, but not once did Governor Cuomo mention the word poor or specifically address poverty, which was a focal point of his father's administration.
But wait, Ken, hang on. Before you answer, let me play this clip, which I think sets it in a different light than we would hear from, say, a Chris Christie coming at cutting government with relish in New Jersey.
We will propose a Clean Up Albany plan with real reform. This is not going to be a situation where the people of this state will have suffered for years and lost trust, and now we're going to give them a watered-down or half-baked ethics reform bill. They're going to have real ethics reform. We're going to end pay-to-play. We're going to have full disclosure of outside income. We're going to have an independent monitor. We're going to listen to Ed Koch's warnings, Mayor Ed Koch, who's been going all over the state, and we applaud him for it, talking about independent redistricting. Congratulations, Mr. Mayor. We must also, at the same time, once again become the progressive capital of the nation. Yes, we must deal with these fiscal realities, and they are difficult, and they will be time-consuming. But at the same time, we also have to continue to achieve social progress that made this state famous. You should applaud.
You should applaud, Ken Lovett. He had to urge them to applaud for the idea of progressive government that leads the nation and that made this state famous. But there it was in the speech.
What I think, you know, the difference between the speech that he gave and the speech that a Carl Palladino or a Chris Christie or some other Republicans might have given is that Andrew Cuomo recognizes, like the Republicans, that you need to cut government, that it's bloated, that it's, you know, they've overspent beyond their means and all that. But at the core, Andrew Cuomo believes in government, whereas a lot of times when you hear the Republicans, it's demonizing government for the problems, that, you know, we need a smaller government to stay out of the way. Andrew Cuomo, like his father, sees government as a way to help the public. And he feels that, you know, he feels that what he wants to do is get it under control and then use it as a force for good.
Listeners, did you listen to the speech yesterday or watch it? Do you think that Andrew Cuomo succeeded for you in framing government as a force for good, even while saying New York State's government has to be cut because we've way overspent? Or any other reaction to the State of the State speech? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Our guests, WNYC political blogger Ozzie Pabra, who was in the House there in Albany yesterday, and Daily News Albany Bureau Chief Ken Lovett. 212-433-WNYC, or you can post your comment to our politics webpage, itsafreecountry.org. Again, our phone number, 212-433-9692. How's Andrew doing 5 days in? And Ozzie, I want to get back to the question of who those special interests were firing missiles at Captain Cuomo's cartoon battleship, because we might usually think of special interests as Wall Street and the real estate industry and things like that. But was Captain Cuomo actually referring mostly to his own troops, the state workers and their public sector unions?
It does seem to be that way. The people that he's been targeting so far for reductions and givebacks are public sector employees and then people who are advocating for more spending, those in the healthcare industry and even some of the people in the teaching field. So when an executive like Cuomo talks about special interests, it's sort of code word for people that are coming up to Albany asking lawmakers to spend additional resources. And those are the quote-unquote advocates that we see locally talking about grants that are, you know, being, you know, the bacon coming home from other lawmakers. So it's teachers' unions, it's healthcare unions, it's people that are coming up and shaking the tin can in Albany.
Ken, you want to keep going on that?
Yeah, I think it's even more than just those who are shaking the tin can. The interests he's really looking at, who are lobbing the missiles, so to speak, are the big ticket ones, like Ozzie said, the teachers' unions, the healthcare unions, and the public workers. Specifically, those are the groups that put millions of dollars in ads on the radio and the television during every budget season, attacking governors' proposals to cut them. Those are the people who give, those are the groups that give, you know, millions and millions of dollars in donations and wind up in a lot of ways controlling the lawmakers through threats of not endorsing them and backing other candidates. So those are the groups he's looking at. What I found interesting yesterday was he sought to buy himself time and neutralize some of them by particularly the healthcare industry by forming a commission, for instance, to come up with recommendations to cut the Medicaid program and reorganize and revamp the program.
In fact, he made that distinction. He said not just to cut Medicaid, though it certainly needs to have less money spent on it. He said not just to cut it, but to reinvent it.
Right, and he put the unions on that task force. And what does that do? It's going to be hard for the unions to attack the governor, at least for the next 2 months, because the task force doesn't report till March, I believe. It's going to be hard for them to put up ads when they're supposed to be helping find a solution.
Well, President Obama put Democrats and Republicans on a financial crisis inquiry commission, and they couldn't come up with a unified report. He put Democrats and Republicans on a deficit reduction commission, and they couldn't come up with the necessary majority. So having the managers and the union leaders there doesn't necessarily mean that they're actually going to come up with anything other than acrimony, does it, Ken?
No, it doesn't. And the question is, a lot of these groups do not report back until way into the budget process. And so, A, what is his proposal going to look like? Is it just going to be a number that we want to cut $2 billion, $3 billion from Medicaid, and then he's waiting for this commission to, you know, recommend the ways to get there? Mm-hmm. And if they don't come to an agreement, what does that do to the budget process?
Grace in Rockland. You're on WNYC. Hi, Grace. Thanks
for
calling.
Good morning. Thank you. Listen, I was very hopeful listening to the speech. I did not vote for the governor, but I was still very, very pleased with what he was saying. And I hope he follows through, because the state lost another two congressional seats. The way we're going, I don't know who's going to be left in the state to pay the taxes. Something has to be done. Something has to be revamped. And I hate this word. What interest groups?
Special interest
special
groups.
Special interest groups. If I say it, I'm thinking of one thing. If somebody else says it, it's thinking another thing. We're all talking in euphemisms. We don't come out with what we really mean. Even like the word change. What does change mean? What does this mean? Change to me might not be what I want change to be. Things have to be just spelled out in very simple terms. We're spending too much money. We are in terrible debt. There is the money isn't being spent properly. Of course, we don't want grandma on the street. We don't want the kids not educated. But all that has to be looked into, and it has to be looked into, in my opinion, openly, and not with preconceived ideas, mm-hmm. and not with fancy words. Just say it like it is.
And you found him. It's funny because his father always got criticized for saying it with fancy words.
Right.
But you found the son a plain speaker yesterday.
Yes, I found him a plain speaker. I thought Mario was a wonderful speaker, but a politician, he's better off, you know, a noun, a verb, and a noun, a verb, and an object. We don't need a million adjectives and a million adverbs. Get this country back and this state back, because the young people are leaving, And the only people are left are the people that need something, unfortunately.
Great.
And we're not going to have enough money to pay for it. I mean, you can't keep taxing the rich. The rich are going to leave, and the rich are not going to have any more money to tax.
Grace, thank you so
thank
much
you.
For your call. Thank you very much. Grace, diagramming the sentences of two generations of governors. But Ozzie, really to her point, Governor Cuomo won't actually get specific until his budget address next month. I think it's the 1st of February.
Right.
But the specifics of what he proposed yesterday in his State of the State speech included that executive order creating a Medicaid redesign team that we mentioned, another team to cut unfunded mandates to local school districts that's somehow supposed to make the cuts to education more palatable or more easily enacted, and a commission to cut government agencies and cut authorities by 20%, which is a big number. And all quickly enough to incorporate these historic redesigns into the next budget, which begins April 1st. So what might any of this look like? Ken talked about the people he's putting on the Medicaid reinvention. Is this just window dressing, or are we actually seeing a reinvention process?
I think it's a genuine effort to really reimagine what government can be. One of the examples he gave was how there's different departments that are basically overseeing the financial industry. And he questioned, during the Wall Street meltdown, where were the federal regulators? And he said, the other question we should be asking is, where were the state regulators? And he said, a number of these agencies were sort of created and spun off and are now operating in these artificial boundaries, that if you really think about the way the industry works nowadays, a lot of the way we've siloed regulators and officials should be evaporated, and these people should be brought back together. So this is coming from a guy who, as a hobby, opens up the hood of a car and tinkers with an engine and figures out how an entire process is working and how different components interplay with each other. And I think for a guy who has several decades of experience in Albany and also several years of Washington experience, here's a guy with a perspective that says, just because we have a system currently doesn't mean it has to stay this way. So there is a chance to really reimagine government, I think.
Peter in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, Brian. I went up to Albany to listen to the speech. I write a small blog about schools. And, it was sort of a little silly that he said that people were in the audience. It was 1 o'clock on a Wednesday. I mean, people are working.
Well,
I mean,
they gave out 1,000 tickets to members of the public. Did you get one of those tickets?
Yes, I did.
Uh-huh.
But the audience was, it's 1 o'clock on a Wednesday. Most people are working, and the audience was filled with people who have some interest in government. And I wandered into the reception afterwards, and, of course, there were hundreds and hundreds of people in the reception, almost all of whom were lobbying for something or other. But that's the nature of government. To point to the lobbyists and make them evil people, I think back in Athens there were lobbyists whispering in Socrates' ear. It's up to the legislators and the governor to listen to the lobbyists, who, after all, are representatives of people who have interests. I hope that what they come out with, doesn't really injure the poor or doesn't rape the schools. They come up with a plan which actually makes sense, and one in which there's a lot of consensus from all parties. And I am actually hopeful that Silver and Skelos will actually come together and agree on a budget that makes some sense, although I thought the governor's speech was greatly lacking in specificity, especially as far as schools are concerned.
Peter, thank you for your call, and certainly we will have to hear more specifics from him in the budget address in February. Before you go, Ken, is Andrew Cuomo, to your ear or to your experience, because you've covered him much more up close than I have, a master ad libber, the way he sounds to me, and such a master of his material that he gave the State of the State and his inaugural address, both with all their passion and with all their logical detail and facts and figures, without a teleprompter and without an actual script?
Well, he worked off notes and an outline, and he did work very hard on the speech. But what he does is he did this with the inaugural, he'll outline what he wants to say. A lot of the facts and figures were on the screens that we saw. But no, he's very good. He knows what he wants to say. He believes in what he's saying, seemingly. And I think he just had it down and came out and did it. He spoke for 47 minutes. And, it's good because we haven't, I've been here since really the end of Mario Cuomo. And I don't think we've had a governor who can speak like this since Mario Cuomo. We had George Pataki, Eliot Spitzer, and David Patterson, and they weren't the type of speakers like this who can really inspire a crowd. The big question is, will he be able to get any or most of his agenda through? And that's what we're going to see in the coming months. And we're going to know sooner rather than later.
Pataki was elected because he was a bland speaker in reaction to Mario Cuomo. Patterson leaves Spitzer's short tenure out for the moment. Patterson, of course, also gave pretty good speeches that he memorized. He actually had to memorize the whole speech because of his disability. And he was, in his way, a very good speaker. And now, go ahead. What were you going to say? Real quick.
I was going to say, but this is a different level, and I think really it's the first time in probably since Pataki's first 2 years that we've seen an agenda like this, and then it goes way beyond it. We haven't seen a call to really reorganize government. And again, we need to see the specifics. We need to see what actually gets enacted, and if then anything gets done. But after the last 4 years of dysfunction and corruption and just really watching New York kind of spin down the drain, there's at least hope now. And I would say cautious hope given what we've seen, but at least there's some hope, that which we didn't have the last couple of years.
Ken Lovett, Albany bureau chief for the Daily News, and WNYC political blogger Ozzie Paber. You can read his stuff on our politics website. It's freecountry.org. And by the way, Ozzie, do you know what I'm holding here, this little pamphlet?
It looks like a little book.
It is. It's a tiny little book, and it's called The United States Constitution.
Little book with a big impact.
That's right. And today on the House floor, they are reading the United States Constitution, and we will dip in ourselves to some selected chapters coming up next.